I mean, I wonder if it's just your passion for Jake or for Drake or some other reason.
Good old Aubrey.
I do have boundless passion for Drake.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we all really?
But I feel like that song is like, you know, like about knowing yourself, about like running away from your problems, running with your problems. Mm-hmm. You can't escape your problems. Much like the family in Force Majeure, yeah. Directed by Ruben Östlund, and mm-hmm. played at the Cinematheque this weekend. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully you can catch it at another theater in Vancouver, potentially the Van City Theater. But you're just going to have to wait and see. You're going to have to do a little of your own research. But you know what? That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Always good to dig.
Mm-hmm.
See what worms you can find.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we are nearing the end of our weekly hourly show. So I'd just like to hit you guys with a little bit of information. So yeah, we're going to be playing Interstellar at the Norm Theater this week. Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. You can find that at 7 p.m. in the Norm Theater. Saturday, potentially at 7:30, but pardon me, remember to check our Facebook page to find that out. We're going to be playing There Will Be Blood at the Norm Theater next week because PTA, and that's really all the reason we need. And if you question that, don't, just watch it. Next week we're going to be talking about There Will Be Blood. It's going to be a little bit of a PTA week, I think. Seems
ooh,
like the panel's into that.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that sort of high-pitched as a yes, as well as the yes following it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Alrighty then.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be going over all of Paul Thomas Anderson's films. Not just There Will Be Blood, but...
The Dirk Diggler story, maybe, huh?
Oh, the Dirk Diggler story.
I haven't seen Hot 8 yet.
Yeah, neither have I.
I haven't seen Hot 8 either. We have some homework to do, my friend.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Alrighty then. So yeah, do you guys have any last remarks before we close it off?
I think we've covered Force Majeure and Interstellar fairly well.
Remember to hug your children, I think is the message that we can glean from both of those movies.
Yeah, and don't leave them to die in an avalanche.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or space.
And be wary of when you buy them iPhones.
Yeah.
And if you end up in the fifth dimension, just find your daughter's bedroom and start pushing some books. And I hope that wasn't a spoiler. My mistake.
As soon as you said spoiler, it became
it's
a spoiler.
It's too late.
Almost, yeah.
We'll let our listeners just pick
everyone's seen
apart.
Interstellar anyway, right?
Yeah, you're like worried about a spoiler for a blockbuster, you gotta sort out your life.
Mm-hmm. You gotta take a chill pill, you know? But anyways. Alright, thank you very much for joining us. This was The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM. And let's not forget, that was R-E-E-L-W-H-I-R-L-E-D. Alrighty then. So today we had Emily, we had our hosts Quincy, and of course your favorite DJ Shock Jockey. Join us next week. We're going to be back Thursday morning at 8 a.m. Oh, come on, Quincy. You know
my favorite.
They all love me. Oh, here we go. Here we go. But next Thursday, 8 a.m., we're going to be talking about There Will Be Blood and PTA. And you will be hearing us then. All right. Enjoy your day. Enjoy your week. And drink milk.
Et tout ce qu'on peut dire, c'est que la musique, c'est vraiment une façon de vivre et pas quelque chose qu'on fait pendant les week-ends. La musique, c'est pas seulement ce qu'on fait sur scène, c'est quelque chose à laquelle tu donnes ta vie, c'est comment tu es, comment tu vis et ce que tu fais.
It's what you are, it's how you live, it's the things that you do.
Et nous, on va continuer sans aucun doute.
We'll continue doing that.
Welcome to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks and also online at, well, I wouldn't say online, and also our flagship station CITR for the full hour show. Welcome to Community Living Show. I'm the operator, Kelly. Across from me is Michael Rubin.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening.
Depending on where you Anyone. Are in the world.
Yeah, anywhere. Anyways.
Or if you're listening on podcasts.
Yes, so. This is all part of the NCRA Radio Network, so
yeah,
it doesn't matter which one it is, if it's morning or exactly. afternoon or evening. So exactly. there you go.
That seems to be an interesting segue, considering we're talking to Cicely Blaine this morning from Greenwich.
Yes, that's for sure.
That's right. We have with us Cicely and our good friend Carrie. She's coming back for, this is your second time with mm-hmm. us?
Yes. Yeah. You decided to brave me again.
So, we had so you on the other radio station on Co-op Radio, yeah. so this is the other part of the...
Yes, it was an adventure getting here this morning.
This is good. This is good.
The sub
so
is an interesting place.
If you guys are
place.
Driving, hold on to your steering wheels because Carrie will keep you in stitches the whole time.
Exactly.
Oh, well, we're happy to have Cicely here to talk about some of the initiatives that she has on campus. And oh, is it? Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and what the initiatives are and about yourself and yeah. what motivated you to get into this this area?
Yeah, so I'm a third-year student here at UBC. I'm studying European Studies and Russian. But then in my spare time, I'm, like, super interested in a lot of initiatives that try to make the campus more, like, inclusive and accessible and try to, like, encompass people of different identities. And particularly I'm interested in making spaces for LGBTQ folks and particularly, like, queer people of color because, like oftentimes at UBC, people of those identities are marginalized and there's not really many spaces for those people to feel safe and comfortable.
Interesting. You are from England, and did you start similar programs back home?
I was involved in a program called Thamesmead Youth Voice. Thamesmead was the local area where I was from, and we were basically trying to bring marginalized youth off of the streets and like find them kind of like things to do in their spare time that would help them like not get into gangs and like not become involved in street crime, which is like a really big problem in Southeast London. And so we actually got $8 million from the British government to set up kind of like a leisure center. And it's just a really awesome place where young people can go and hang out and like take classes and do apprenticeships, kind of to like boost their career and like give them a better start in life than a lot of people in that area have.
Programs like that are really important to the youth because they help build esteem as well as education,
especially in
urban learning,
areas,
use their brain more than their brawn.
Yeah.
And in the wrong directions.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, why Russian studies rather than women's studies?
Oh, that is a good question. I've been studying Russian since I was in grade 8, and I really love the language, and I just think the culture is so interesting. And I love Russian literature and history, and the major that I'm doing is really flexible, so it like allows me to take a whole variety of disciplines. So I do like history, geography, economics, literature, etc. And then like within that, I'm able to apply like a feminist lens to a lot of the stuff that I do. So often like when I'm writing papers, I find myself like, you know, if I'm writing about like urban geography, I'm like looking at the feminist perspective of urban geography or something like that. So I really like to kind of bring that lens to like whatever it is that I'm studying. So although like there's a really great gender studies program here at UBC, I don't like feel the need to be in that program to be talking about feminism or to be talking about queer issues. I always somehow find a way to like bring it into whatever I'm studying. So yeah.
Okay, so since you decided not to go into the women's studies, I guess the question is, what is your opinion or your view on gender?
Ooh, that's a big question. Well, I've been involved with a group called the Equity Ambassadors for 3 years now, and we basically try to make campus kind of like more inclusive. And one of the things that we really try to do is remove like the idea that gender is a binary thing and try to kind of introduce the fact that gender is a spectrum and that people like exist across this entire spectrum. And it's not like there's men and women and there's male and female, like there's people inside and there's people outside. And it's like, it's not just like this dichotomous, like one or the other. And I think as soon as people start to realize that gender is so fluid, there'll be a greater sense of equality because we won't be placing like such specific roles on gender. So for example, like obviously the traditional view of women is that they should be at home, they should be cooking and cleaning and raising the children, but like as soon as we start to see gender as a more fluid and like less binary thing, not only will it be more equal for people who are cisgender, it will be more equal for people who don't like identify with the gender binary that society is like kind of obsessed with.
That's interesting. And upon viewing that interview that you did with Africa Roots TV, I was very interested to hear your opinions about white feminism and how that plays a role in things. And these are terms that I'm not familiar with. I don't know, is neo-feminism perhaps an accurate term to describe some of these new frames of thought? Because from, you know, when I was growing up and working with transition homes and whatnot, what was it, volunteering in those? They were terms I would never heard before. And could you explain a little more about those?
Yeah. So basically, what I was touching on in that interview is that feminism is awesome and everybody should be a feminist. But I think, like, if your feminism is not intersectional, then it's not a positive type of feminism. Like, if you're going to campaign for women's rights and if you're going to campaign for gender equality and everything that comes within feminism, you also need to remember that humans come in so many different varieties, and you know, you can't be a feminist but then like say, oh, trans women are not women, or you can't be a feminist and be like, oh, black women's rights don't matter, or lesbian women's rights don't matter. Like, if you're being a feminist, you have to encompass the views and lift up the voices of all types of people. So, and because like we live in like a patriarchal society where some people are oppressed and others are privileged, if you're trying to, you know, be involved in a movement like feminism where the end goal is equality, then you also have to be like, you also have to acknowledge your own privilege within that. So for like for myself, for example, I'm privileged in the fact that I'm cisgender, so like I identify with the gender that I was assigned at birth, so like it's like the opposite of transgender, and so for me that's a privilege that I experience in this world, and so it's my responsibility to be an ally to trans women and like lift up like the voices of trans women, because they're often marginalized. And so white feminism is the idea that they're fighting for women's rights, but they're forgetting that other types of women exist. And so the ideal kind of feminism that a lot of people in my community are striving for is one where if you experience privilege, like if you're a white cisgender able-bodied woman, for example, you're helping to lift up the voices of black women and queer women and transgender women and women with disabilities, so that, you know, everybody is on an equal playing field.
That's very interesting. Could you give any like specific examples of how that might apply? Mm-hmm. Like how we might fail in that mission, you know, with white feminism?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, something, there's been a like lot of debate about Emma Watson's speech on feminism recently.
Yes, yes.
At the UN, and she started this campaign called He for She.
Yeah.
And it's a really great campaign. It's like bringing feminism into mainstream conversation, and that's really awesome because it's not really talked about that much, and it's really great to have a famous person like talk about feminism because it's not really talked about that much in mainstream media. But at the same time, her speech and like her idea of feminism is very exclusive to basically people who look like her. So it's very exclusive type of feminism for like white women who are like British and like upper middle class and able-bodied and heterosexual. And so while like she's doing a really great job of like raising the profile of feminism, at the same time she's still kind of excluding a lot of other types of women whose voices need to be heard.
So is the ultimate goal here to make it so that race, because you've now included race, mm-hmm. And gender become transparent to a person's identity,
mm-hmm.
that race, gender, creed, all those other things become negligible to how you actually identify
mm-hmm.
yourself.
Yeah.
So that we're all tolerant of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, I think we've gotten to a point in feminism where, well, in fact, I mean, it's been happening for years. It's just becoming more kind of popular now. But where the idea of intersectionality, which is like everybody has such diverse and multifaceted identities, like you can't just be a woman, like you're a woman and you have a race, mm-hmm. and you have a sexuality and you have abilities and, you know, you have a background and you have a language, and like you can't exist without all these other things. You are a culmination of everything that makes you who you
right.
are, because of where you come from, because of where you were born, because of how you were raised, and all of these things that just make you like who you are as a human. And so yeah, it's very important that when you're trying to do feminist activism or any kind of activism, really, you're mm-hmm. trying your hardest to lift up the voices of those who are most marginalized and those whose voices are often like not heard in mainstream media. Like, for example, when we turn on the television, we often see like white cisgendered men, and you know, like we don't see like queer women of color, we don't see trans women, we don't see trans men, we don't see a lot of women with disabilities. And so it's really important that in doing activist work, we try to like lift up the voices of those who are marginalized.
Yeah.
What was your journey into activism and advocacy? You know, how did you come to be the woman you are?
Well, in my first year at UBC, I went to the F Word Conference, which is a conference kind of about feminism, organized by the GRSJ Undergraduate Students Association at UBC. And yeah, me and a friend of mine, we just like put together a presentation about like the importance of like Black feminism and like raising the voices of Black women and like listening to their stories and stuff. And I didn't really know much about feminism, but then I got to know a lot of really great people and like started to like socialize in more activist circles. And but it's pretty much only actually been like this year at UBC that I've really like become more closely involved with activism, and especially like in the wider Vancouver context outside of UBC. And yeah, I got involved with an initiative called the Talon, which is UBC's alternative student press, and it's basically kind of like a newspaper, and we write about stuff that we don't like at UBC, and we kind of give a social justice lens to a lot of things. And you know, like, there's a lot of things that kind of, like, go uncritiqued at the university, and sometimes we really need to talk about, like, why things might be exclusive or why things might be problematic. And so I've learned, like, so much from being part of the Talon and, like, writing about all of these initiatives and, like, meeting really awesome activist people.
Wow. Yeah. So one of the things that I keep hearing, and it's something that, as an activist, that An activist that started in another country, in the U.S., that I've fought against, is instead of having Black rights, white rights, mm-hmm. is we just have rights. Mm. And it sounds like while we've come a long way with this, that we all can go shop in the same stores,
yeah.
and we can all.
Mm-hmm.
do a lot of things side by side, it still sounds like we have a lot longer to go, a lot
yeah.
further to go until we actually really reach equality.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, a lot of people are complacent to racism and sexism and homophobia because
mm-hmm.
it's not as obvious as it used to be. And so, for example, you think about the civil rights movement, like, racism was very obvious. Like, there was segregation and, like, Black people couldn't go in certain places and Black people were beaten and Black people were arrested and blah, blah, blah. And so, basically, right now, racism is, like, more systemic and it's more subtle, and like we see it in like random everyday activities as opposed to like extreme things.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
You're involved in quite a number of projects, and one of them is you were talking about the African Roots TV,
mm-hmm.
and that looks like you wanted to turn it into a film?
Yeah, we're thinking about it. The interview that I did, I was talking about gender, and I was talking about homophobia, and particularly in, like, African communities and Black
mm-hmm.
communities and the diaspora. And, yeah, we kind of just want to maybe do an interview, make some kind of film about like
yeah.
the voices of Black queer people.
Okay,
in Vancouver.
Let's get back to that in a
yeah.
second. Thank you for listening to NCRA Networks, and we need to take a quick station break.
Yeah, this is the Community Living Show.
Hey there, CITR members. CITR's annual general meeting is this March 30th at the UBC Sub Ballroom. The annual general meeting consists of reports, elections for new community board members, elections for the leaders of next year's student executive, and voting on bylaw changes. It is a super important event for CITR members to attend. We need at least 60 student members present to be able to vote, so please tell your pals. After the annual general meeting, we will have a volunteer appreciation party, celebrating accomplishments throughout the year, giving away prizes, and offering free food. This March 30th at the UBC Sub Ballroom.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's nonprofit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Welcome back to the Community Living Show on the NCRE Radio Networks. Here again is Michael.
Hello again. So we're going to continue on. Cicely was talking about the African Roots TV film. Mm-hmm. So let's move forward with what that's going
to
be about.
Yeah. So basically, we just kind of want to create a forum where people who identify as queer and are also from Africa or the Caribbean or any kind of African ancestry can talk about their experiences, because as I mentioned before, like a lot of the representation, particularly of queer people, they're often white, and so we kind of want to create a space where queer people of color can like have some screen time and like talk about their experiences, and people can hopefully learn from that and see how important it is to hear different people's voices and stories.
Since we're both black, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming that you are a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, describe how it is being in a black family. How that comes about. How you, the difference between maybe admitting mm-hmm. to being gay in a black family versus how it could go in a white family.
There
are differences.
Yeah, my family is like very liberal and like super relaxed and have like quite like Western perspectives, I guess you could say. And mm-hmm. so like for me, it's totally fine. But I do know some people who do have that kind of like cultural situation where like homosexuality is not accepted in their culture, and that can be like really, really challenging. Like coming out, and you kind of have to make a decision between like accepting and loving yourself and then also being accepted in your family, and that's like a really challenging kind of like barrier to like draw across. Mm-hmm. Like I know, for example, like I talked in the interview that Carrie mentioned, I talked about how like there's like individualist versus collectivist cultures, and how traditionally in African and Caribbean societies the cultures are more collectivist, which basically means, you know the saying, like, it takes a village to raise a child, and like it's all about community and it's about like looking out for each other. But then unfortunately, due to colonialism, this Western idea of like it being individuals, like the American dream of like everybody's out for themselves and like it's just about making money and like right. you only care about yourself and your immediate family, you don't care about the wider community. Mm-hmm. These colonial views were imposed on Africa and the Caribbean, and basically that then meant that there's a lot of like sexism and homophobia in these communities, and like you can like slowly see some people starting to like unlearn that colonialism that has been like imposed on them and their communities. But unfortunately, that's like the main reason why there is a higher degree of homophobia in those societies.
Yeah.
It's interesting to know the history of that. It's and this is probably a good time to mention too what we were talking about earlier about Strut on Saturday. I hope to see you there, and I hope to see everybody there. What was it? Because the Foundation of Hope is throwing its press launch, free to everybody, at the Junction. Doors at 6:30. The Junction is on Davie at Butte. The Foundation of Hope works to help LGBTQ refugees and asylum seekers because of, you know, these issues in these countries, the majority of countries in the world. Unfortunately, it's illegal to be gay.
Yeah.
I mean, as ludicrous as that sounds, you know, and quite often punishable by death and other things. And, yeah. You know, do you find driven to this because of your connection to the Black culture?
Yeah, I think I do, and I just think like we're in such a privileged situation to be here in Canada, where you know, like gay rights are very good, and like it's been that way for I think 10 years now that gay rights have been legal in Canada, and a gay marriage has been legal in Canada, and I think therefore we have kind of a responsibility to kind of help those who come from countries where they're criminalized for their sexuality. But at the same time, we have to be very careful and we have to be very diligent to kind of make sure that we're not like acting like Canada is superior, because there is still like a lot of instances of colonialism happening in Canada, because I mean, like, this is not the land of the Europeans. This is the land of the indigenous people, whose land was stolen by Europeans like not that long ago in comparison to how long indigenous people have lived here. And so I think that while we celebrate the fact that Canada is quite a privileged place to live for a lot of people, we also have to remember some of the instances of ongoing settler colonialism that happen here, and how, as I just mentioned, colonialism is one of the biggest factors why a lot of countries do have perhaps like more homophobic policies. Because if we look back in Canada's past, Britain's past, America's past, the rules that like, for example, Uganda, homosexuality is criminalized, and if we look back in the history of these settler countries that we live in now, those laws were the same. And it's only because Canada has had the infrastructure and it has had the money and the time and the education to progress past those kind of what some people would consider as backward views. Yet in a lot of African communities, like Uganda, as I mentioned, they haven't had the money or the infrastructure or the time, really, to move beyond those colonial views. And so, yeah, I think it's very important that while we're here in this privileged role, we can help those who are like seeking asylum or seeking refuge away from countries where they might be criminalized for their sexuality. But yeah, I think it's also important to acknowledge like those people's cultural pasts, and like how I'm sure they dream of going back to their country, but they just can't because of obviously they don't want to be sent to jail, and they don't want to be punished by death just because of who they love. And so I think while we're kind of providing a home and celebrating refugees here, we also need to be like looking for ways for them to still love and celebrate their own cultures.
Absolutely. Yeah. And have that identity, which is so important. Yeah. Culturally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you think because the African community is so small here in comparison to other parts of the world, do you think that it creates a bit of a hindrance to development in this process?
Yeah, the African community here is so small. I actually just learned the other day that like Black people make up 0.1% of Vancouver's population, so we're very tiny. And I do think it's very difficult to do community organizing when there's so few of us. And while we can, you know, like, we have a really amazing, like, African-Caribbean community here at UBC, but we're still a very small proportion of the people. And a lot of our events are kind of just us, if that makes sense. Like, it's very hard to get other people to care about our issues, and very hard to get, you know, the rest of the UBC community to become interested in the things that we're passionate about. And so, for example, the Africa Awareness Initiative is a group that's trying to get more people to apply to do the African Studies minor at UBC, but it's very hard to kind of, like, get the rest of the UBC community to be interested in what we're doing, because we're such a small group, so we have very little power in the system. And so, yeah, I think it's very hard to do effective community organizing in a large scale when the community is so small. But at the same time, it does mean that we do have a very close-knit community, and it's very kind of like cozy, I guess, and supportive. And so in that aspect, we're able to like support each other and like listen to each other's stories and hold events where we celebrate our own culture and our own blackness.
That's great. The speaking of events, mm-hmm. You've got some things coming up.
Something that I'm very passionate about and I was working on last year is something called Camp Out. And it's a camp for trans and queer and allied youth who live in BC and the Yukon, aged 14 to 21, I think. And basically, it's like a three-day camp on Gambier Island, and it's just like a really amazing experience that I had the fortune of being part of last year. And yeah, I just really encourage any youth to apply because it's such a safe space. And if, for example, like you live in a homophobic community or like you have having trouble like coming out to your family or you don't feel supported by the people around you, like it's the most amazing, it's very short, 3 days, but it's the most amazing experience. And like speaking from some like experience of like working there last year, I also encourage people to apply to be a cabin leader or a community resource volunteer because it's so important to kind of like protect and inspire queer youth, particularly in like the more rural communities of BC, because like in Vancouver we have pretty good access to resources and communities and we can go to a lot of events, but if you live in like a rural BC town, you might not have the support that you need in, you know, like understanding your own identity as a queer person or a trans person. So yeah, camps like that are so crucial to the safety and the experiences of young queer people.
Absolutely. Well, growing up in Williams Lake, BC, I can understand how, you know, those communities definitely need those kind of resources. And can you tell us, you know, how people can go about applying? Where can they find these resources?
Yeah, so if they go to the Camp Out website, which is just campout.ca, all of the applications are available there, or they can look for Anna White, who works at UBC, and she's the camp director, and she's amazing, and yeah, she has lots of information.
That's really neat. Yeah. And what events are you having on campus?
Well, as I mentioned, Toyin from Africa Roots TV and I are looking to kind of create more awareness about voices for queer people of color. Mm-hmm. And this Friday, actually, we're having like a celebration of cultures at UBC. It's called the Intercultural Fair. And it's kind of like, as we were talking about earlier, about how like the black community is so small, we're trying to like create a space where people are like encouraged to like collaborate through across cultures. And like, that's really important because, you know, we often find that like different cultural groups create like tiny little boxes across campus. And it's really awesome to have a day where everybody from different cultures comes together. And then we just celebrate the ethnic diversity at UBC.
Oh, sounds amazing. Wow. So was it, and what was the Friday?
Yeah, Friday, times, March 27th, 12 till 5 at the UBC bookstore.
Oh, that's fabulous. Yeah. So cool. Invite everybody down to, and gonna be start amazing. Building the community.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's really good to see someone like you actually trying to go get out there and build community. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really good to have you on the show talking about these things.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to come back to a musical break, and we'll be back with another guest.
Yes.
In a moment.
Hi, I'm Dan Hamhuis. On the ice, I play defense for the Vancouver Canucks. Off the ice, I've joined another team, the Canucks Autism Network, and I hope you'll join us for our family festival on Sunday, April 12th at Jack Poole Plaza. Enjoy live entertainment, food, and family-friendly activities as we celebrate World Autism Awareness Month. And best of all, it's free. So come out on April 12th and help spread awareness. To learn more, please visit CanucksAutism.ca/support.
Late Night Show is the start of the weekend. We play all types of D&D or jungle for the first half of the show. On the second half of the show, it gives you that irritating noise that you just don't want to hear it. Or it could be some ambient sounds that might drift off and or fall asleep in the moment of life. Or it could be some new age that you just heard on most stations, but even better. Or it could be that this music has no beat or drums in that music. Either way, tune into the Late Night Show, now broadcasting on Saturday mornings at 12:30 a.m. right after the Medicine Show, also hosted by me, DJ Rain, and Jason Lawrence. If you happen to hear us around the world, you can always check us out at CITR.ca.
Yes, check it. We'll play you later. Anyways, that's the other show I do, the Late Night Show, on Friday night, Saturday mornings, if you're a late night go-getter. Anyways, you tune in to the Community Living Show here on CITR, flagship station CITR 101.9 FM, and also stations abroad, British Columbia, on the NCR Radio Networks. We have a new guest, Michael. Can
yes,
you
we do have a new guest, Gina Bergowski?
Right?
Jean Bergowski. Jean Bergowski, yeah. Close. Yeah,
it's a hard name.
Yeah, and everyone knows how horrible I am at names. Anyway,
that was because we were talking about Poland. You wanted to have the ski on the end.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because you said something about having lived in Poland,
yes,
for 5 years or something like that.
Exactly.
Right? The conversations we have, like while the mics are turned off, so
or moved around.
Well, good morning. So, thanks for having me.
So, tell us a little bit about you and...
Well, Jean Briganti is actually the U.S. consul for arts and culture, and so I'm really curious what that all entails.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What's the job description?
Well, I'd like to say I have the most fun portfolio in the consulate, and the same kinds of positions exist in our embassies. So I'm responsible for a few different things, cultural and educational outreach, and media relations at the U.S. consulate. So... that can take the form of lots of different things, but one of our primary missions or goals is to connect across borders in a cultural way. That can take the form of pretty much anything, but it's basically bringing something American content, American artists, American cultural contributors to an audience here in Vancouver, but we would have the same goal regardless of where we're stationed overseas, to bring some bit of U.S. culture to the local audience. And so our programs take a really wide-ranging, have a really wide-ranging scope. Some will focus on youth, some will focus on professionals at different levels of their careers, and we do a lot of work in professional exchanges as well, linking up people from both sides of the border for a really collaborative exchange of ideas, of best practices, and building that network.
What benefit do you think this brings between the U.S. and Canada?
Well, I think there's so much. We, more than probably any other two countries, are just so closely linked. Proximity, just the physical proximity of our countries, our shared values and shared culture, and obviously the largest trade relationship that exists between any two countries, cooperation and lots of things like security and democracy promotion around the world. Culture is very, very interesting because there's areas where our two countries are so similar and where I think because we're so close and we access the same culture and I think same pop culture in a lot of ways, People think that, oh, you know, the U.S. and Canada were so similar. There aren't many differences to celebrate or to build upon. And I think there's a lot we can do in this space. And a lot of what we will try to do when we are working on programs with American content is to connect with people here that may or may not have the same experience traditionally that many would think Canadians would have, or exposure to American culture. So, for example, that might be looking at involving people that are new to Canada or new to Vancouver, people that live in more remote areas that wouldn't have the same access traditionally that most Canadians who live so close to the border would have. So we may look to identify people or organizations that are within those groups to be more inclusive and to give more exposure to that content.
That's interesting. And to what ends?
One of the biggest things is to promote understanding between our two countries, in the sense between the U.S. and Canada. But that would be the same objective regardless between the U.S. and wherever we are in the host country, and that ultimately, if that understanding exists and those network exist, then that provides a really good foundation for further collaboration. So I'll give you an example. If there were, say, a program that we call it an International Visitor Leadership Program, and it's a three-week professional exchange program that the State Department sponsors. And again, this is a global program. It's been around for decades and decades and counts thousands and thousands of alumni, among them would, you know, various heads of state. Margaret Thatcher's first trip to the U.S. was as one of these visitors. But they don't, not to say everyone who participates will become a future prime minister of a large country. But when we work on identifying participants in these programs, we then look at it as a real investment in both the person and their profession, and in the way that we build a network so that upon their return, we have connections throughout communities that are strategically placed if we would want to, say, cooperate on another future program or identify others that can take advantage of future programming. And then one of the greatest benefits that we see is the development of networks, really not just north-south, but east-west throughout Canada. We do several programs a year focused on various strategic themes. In the past year, we've seen one on combating gender-based violence, one on regional municipal economic development, another that focused on young entrepreneurs. And what we see is just the building of networks both between the U.S. and Canadian participants and experts, and then across Canada, so that they will create business, they'll create ideas, and they'll create, it'll kind of serve as a jumping board, really, for future collaboration.
Oh, that's incredible. And you have some specific programs that are very interesting. I was really intrigued to be reading about those last night, and youth initiatives and...
One of the programs that is that's coming up very closely. So if anyone's listening that could take advantage of it, put those antenna up, because there's a deadline approaching this coming Monday, March 30th, and that's the Youth Ambassadors Program with Canada. It is a 3-week exchange that takes place over the summer, beginning July 20th and ending on August 9th, and basically it seeks to identify Canadian students that are between 15 and 18, as well as teachers or counselors or those that work in with youth, in school administrators, and it can be extended beyond
advocacy
teachers.
And
exactly. And basically, the program is fully funded, and it focuses on building youth leadership, on civic engagement and social inclusion, and it has a three-pronged, it's a three-pronged trip that starts with an orientation in Ottawa, and then goes to SUNY, to Plattsburgh, New York. SUNY Plattsburgh is the program program administrator for this program, and that goes down to Washington, D.C. And it seeks to bring students from across Canada. So we're really looking for a lot of diversity, diversity in every sense, ethnic diversity, gender diversity, geographic diversity, which is so important in Canada because there are it is such a large country, and there are students probably scattered all throughout throughout the country that we may never encounter in our everyday work where we are situated in and focused mostly on just because of the geographic realities, the Lower Mainland. So for us, we cover BC and Yukon. We would hope to recruit students to participate in this program, which is fully funded, that would really take this as in some senses, an introduction to the United States, and then followed on by different community outreach and service projects once they're returned in Canada. It's been a program that's gone on for several years, and we really found it is really excellent for emerging youth leaders to get together and learn so much, not just from their travels, but from each other.
That's great motivation. How does this exchange work for, like, the parents that might be, I'd really like my kid to be participating in this?
Sure. You can find the information on our Twitter, our Facebook webpage, and also just by Googling Youth Ambassadors Program with Canada and SUNY Plattsburgh. It's a fairly straightforward application process. And the application today is the 26th, and so by student standards, you've got plenty of time. I mean, it's not closing out until Monday. So I remember those days. You've got a few days. It's a fairly straightforward application process, and the basic requirements are that students have to be between 15 and 18 at the start of the program. So it basically would be open to pretty much anyone that isn't currently in high school. Students have to be Canadian and not dual citizens. And that, you know, around here, since we are so close to the border, there are some students that also hold American citizenship. But because this is a program that is designed to really give that exposure to the U.S. and has that civic education component, we are looking for students that don't have as much, certainly citizenship, but as much familiarity with the U.S. So if you have lived in the U.S. before or have studied there or spent extensive time, that's probably that's likely not going to be the best program for you because this is really designed to give a really deep dive. And in some senses, this will be the first time some of these students are traveling to the United States. So for both the teachers and counselors or those that work with youth and students that are looking to apply and participate, please visit, you can, like I said, just visit one of our sites, or just, you can really just Google Youth Ambassadors Program with Canada 2015, and you'll be taken directly to the site. It's really straightforward. Applications are due by the 30th, and then in the following month, in April, interviews with finalists will be conducted, selections will be made by May, and then the program begins in the 20th of July.
And what is your Facebook and Twitter?
Okay, so it's just Twitter is at US Cons Vancouver, and Facebook is US Consulate Vancouver.
Oh, great, great. What was it, just in case you want a direct line to that? And why Plattsburgh?
Well, Plattsburgh has a great study for Canada. I mean, they obviously have the proximity to the United States, to Canada, situated in the United States, and they have a study. They have a Center for Canadian Studies. So they really, as the program administrators, have a really great understanding of the two countries, of the current realities, of the cultures. And so they're really well situated to administer the program.
Oh, that's great.
It's surprising how easy it is when you're on the East Coast to get back and forth into Canada. Having grown up on the eastern seaboard of this continent, it was like we used to just hang out between one country and the other. It was just nothing to think about it, especially at the time when the borders were a lot easier to go across too. So Kerry, let's go through some of the things that are happening this weekend again.
Struts! We hope to see everybody at Strut. And yes, wear your most fabulous stilettos if you've got them. What was it, boys and girls alike? What was it? That is for the Foundation of Hope. If you're looking up information, look up foundationofhope.net. What was it? To support LGBTQ refugees and asylum seekers. And so this is the press launch at the Junction on Davy Street at Butte, 6:30 on Saturday. That is the 28th. And we're looking forward to seeing everybody. We mentioned earlier our good friend Toyin of Karakata and his involvement. And he and his rather large, amazing African Afrobeat band, along with Kathy Asambe and some special other performances, drag performance businesses by Simone Says. And, of course, some keynote speakers to basically... tell us why we're doing, you know, what we're doing and why we're doing there.
Yeah, who are some of the speakers?
Carl Meadows is the current chair of the Foundation of Hope, and he'll be talking about, you know, the function of the organization and why we are creating this community initiative, which is actually on June 6th, is the big event. That's the big day, and that's a pledged walk on Sunset Beach for 1 mile in stilettos. And you'll be seeing on buses and bus stops and whatnot, you'll be seeing the advertisements for it, you know, and spreading the word.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Well,
a little over time?
Yeah, we got time. About three minutes.
Yeah.
Pack up soon.
That we will have some sound bites on this show from that event, and also look forward to some sound bites from the last weekend's Bill conference. I'll have a chance to put some of those together for you because I was at both with my video camera and recorders. So
beautiful. I'll be looking forward to hearing it. I'm sad I missed it.
Yeah. Well, I will actually say this too. I actually got to speak.
So. Oh, wonderful. And what did you speak on?
I spoke about how we can actually use more media to create more positivity, instead of how the big news media stations they focus on war and death and all that kind of stuff. That we can actually use smaller media and social media to post videos and sound bites of people actually helping each other, people spreading each other's positive message around.
Oh, just like today, you know, we had the pleasure to speak to Jean Briganti and Cicely Blaine, sorry, how is it? To find out what the amazing things are happening in our community and things to get involved in. And, you know, I think Cicely should take a look at the what Jean's has on offer. I think she'd be an ideal candidate for it.
Okay, well, thank you everybody for listening, and that'll do it for today.
All right, see you all next week. All bye-bye. Right.
Bye.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
It's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism, as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, all their clothing. Let's say, you know, someone buys their clothing.
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture. And that's been around for centuries.
This March 28th at the Biltmore Cabaret, VA Kong with openers Freak Heat leaves. This is a sold-out show, but a limited quantity of tickets may be available at doors. For more info, check on the show's Facebook page. Also from Timber Concert soon, Ghostface Killa this Friday at the Alexander, Arab Music this Saturday at the Electric Owl, and Belle and Sebastian this April 8th at the Vogue. To learn more about Timber Concerts and the shows they are bringing to Vancouver, go online to timberconcerts.com.
Hey there, CITR members. CITR's annual general meeting is this March 30th at the UBC Sub Ballroom. The annual general meeting consists of reports, elections for new community board members, elections for the leaders of next year's student executive, and voting on bylaw changes. It is a super important event for CITR members to attend. We need at least 60 student members present to be able to vote, so please tell your pals. After the annual general meeting, we will have a volunteer appreciation party, celebrating accomplishments throughout the year, giving away prizes, and offering free food. This March 30th at the UBC Sub Ballroom.
Hello, you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC in Vancouver, BC. Good morning. How are you? I'm well. Today I managed to make it here on time, so that was good. Anyway, the topic of the show today will be the topic of addiction. But before going on to that hefty topic, let's listen to some music. And to start us off, we have a song by one of my favorite new artists who just released an album this week called Courtney Barnett. The album is called Sometimes I Sit and Think and Sometimes I Just Sit. And this is a song that should resonate with most people in their youth and of any other age. It's called Nobody Really Cares If You Don't Go to the Party. Enjoy.